Notes for theology students are nearly ready. Next Sunday, I know some theology students have been asking if there are notes to accompany this series. Yes, there are, but they're not in right order yet. So hopefully, God willing, have a good week. They'll be out next Sunday for all theology students. In the meantime, let's look at Isaiah chapter 41. And we begin at the first verse. Be silent before me, you islands. Let the nations renew their strength. Let them come forward and speak. Let us meet together at the place of judgment. Who has stirred up one from the east, calling him in righteousness to his service? He hands nations over to him and subdues kings before him. He turns them to dust with his sword, to wind-blown chaff with his bow. He pursues them and moves on unscathed, by a path his feet have not travelled before. Who has done this and carried it through, calling forth the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, with the first of them and with the last, I am he. The islands have seen it and fear. The ends of the earth tremble. They approach and come forward. Each helps the other and says to his brother, be strong. The craftsman, Isaiah at this point gets sarcastic, by the way. He has a fine line in irony. The craftsman encourages the goldsmith, and he who smooths with a hammer spurs on him who strikes the anvil. He says of the welding, it's good. He nails down the idol so that it will not topple. But you, O Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, you descendants of Abraham, my friend, I took you from the ends of the earth, from its farthest corners I called you. I said, you are my servant. I have chosen you and have not rejected you. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. All who rage against you will surely be ashamed and disgraced. Those who oppose you will be as nothing and perish. Though you search for your enemies, you will not find them. Those who wage war against you will be as nothing at all. For I am the Lord your God, who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear, I will help you. Do not be afraid, O worm Jacob, O little Israel, for I myself will help you, declares the Lord, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Have you ever had a panic attack? I know some of you have. Some of us know what that's like. And probably most of us at some point have had something getting close to a panic attack. And the Bible knows all about panic attacks. It's nothing strange to the Bible to have a panic attack. A while back I was counting somebody who'd had a panic attack. And just that week I'd read in Psalm 55, Psalm 55 verse 4, which reads, my heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. I said, oh, that I had the wings of a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. What's that? That's a panic attack. That's a classic panic attack. Doesn't quite need the old paper bag treatment to breathe into to get rid of it, but it's there. That is a panic attack. The psalmist knew what panic attacks are all about. So if you know what that's about, you know what I'm talking about tonight. If you've ever been afraid, you know what I'm talking about tonight. Do you know the most common command in the Bible is don't be afraid? That's the most common command. So I was told. I've not counted them to verify that, but it certainly seems to me more than likely the most common command in the Bible is don't be afraid, because the Bible knows at some point in your life you're going to get scared. It might be a threat to your security. It might be a threat to money. It might be a threat to peace. It might be a threat to people close to you. It might be a threat to yourself. I've been through several times in my life when I've been very afraid. First, one highlight was probably when I got abducted at gunpoint. That was scary. I've been scared about my future, about a job with children at that point in life when they are at their most expensive at university and in the sick form, says he, looking over his glasses. Trust me, it is. And it's scary stuff to find you've suddenly got no job guarantee for the next few years. You get scared. Some of you are facing, in a few weeks' time, you don't need reminding of this, do you? Leaving university in a few weeks' time, stepping out into the teeth of a recession. Not a comfortable feeling. And there are times you feel, I'm sure, a rising sense of panic. What's going to happen to me? How am I going to find a job? At least you might too. Well, the Bible knows all about such fears concerning the future. Fear tells you that you're not important. Fear tells you that there is no future. Fear tells you that there is no one to help you. And God says none of those are true. They are all lies. Lies told to you, fed to you by the fear that is inside you. God says you are important. God says there is a future, and God says he is there to help you. So let's take a look at this passage. Let's take a look at verses 1 to 4, which tells us there is no one more powerful than God. God is stirring up the political map. And it was probably far from obvious as I read it. What's happening here? Who has stirred up one from the east, calling him in righteousness to his service? God hands nations over to him and subdues kings before him. Turns them to dust with his sword, the windblown chaff with his bow. Who on earth is he talking about? Well, probably. And if you read on in this section of Isaiah, you'll find him actually named. And it's a man who was to appear on the political horizon 150 years or more than 150 years after Isaiah lived. But Isaiah's prophesying, looking into the future. And a man who is called Cyrus or Cyrus. And Cyrus was interesting. By the time Cyrus came to power, the Jews had been in exile nearly half a century. Jerusalem had been flattened. Jerusalem was just a pile of mosquito rat-filled rubble with just a poor population hanging on there by the skin of their teeth. And the Jews had been and were still living their life in Babylon. That's present Iraq. And God raised up a Persian king from Iran, modern Iran, called Cyrus. So just get your head around this. We've got the Jews in Babylon. The Jews are in Iraq. It just makes it more fun if I put it onto the modern map, that's all. Suddenly it begins to say, oh, I've heard of that. Okay, so the Jews are prisoners, basically exiles in Iraq. And God calls a king from Iran to cross the border, take over the Iraqi Babylonian Empire, and he released the Jews and sent them back to rebuild Jerusalem. That's why he's a very important man in Jewish history. Not a believer in God of the Jews at all. He was a pagan king. But God used him, and God says, I've called him in righteousness to his service. God has called this pagan king from Iran into Iraq to send the Jews from Iraq back to Jerusalem. Got the idea? Got the picture of how God is redrawing the political map? And the point is that God is behind the headlines. God is using a tyrant to restore his people back to Jerusalem, to send them back to rebuild the temple. God is behind the headlines, and we get frightened by the headlines. Some newspapers have more frightening headlines than others. I'm not going to name them. If you take them, that's your fault if you're constantly worried. Sorry, your fault entirely. But God is behind the headlines. For years, Christians in the West, especially American Christians, lived in fear of the communists, and for decades the Americans lived in fear and anxiety about the Reds under the beds and the Iron Curtain and so on. And that spilled over even into the UK, of course. And we were fed this daily in our headlines. We were taught to fear and to be afraid. And I have to say the world was, in some ways, a very scary place. But God is behind the headlines. I remember reading a while back, some Christians had been, I think from Brother Andrew's organization, had been in China. And they had seen the students of the Cultural Revolution marching through Tiananmen Square and so on. And one of them turned to this guy and he said, "Next year we'll be marching through London." It made a huge impression on him, and he wrote up, you know, the communists are killing the Christians in China, and next year they're going to be marching through London, so please send us money and so on, blah blah blah. It didn't happen. In fact, quite the opposite happened. The Chinese are now marching through London with digital cameras, posing in front of Buckingham Palace and the Tower of London. And if they are going to march to London, it will probably be a march for Jesus, because a lot of them are Christians coming over here. And it just didn't happen. God had other plans. Despite our fears, despite our concerns, God had other plans. "Don't fear," says God. "I am the powerful God. I am in control of what's behind the headlines." I don't think God is in control of the headlines in the paper somehow. It doesn't strike me as that's the case. But he's in control of what happens behind them. And then there's only one God, verses 5 to 7. Let's have those on the screen. There is only one God. And God just reminds the pagan people, the idolaters of the time, that their gods have to be nailed down, because if they're not nailed down, they might fall over if there's a bit of an earth tremor or something, or somebody knocks into them. Their gods are so powerful, if somebody bumps into them, they'll fall over. So they have to be nailed in place, so they don't move, they don't do anything. You're supposed to laugh at that, by the way. That's a 7th century BC joke, just in case you're wondering. 8th century BC joke. God doesn't fall, says Isaiah. God doesn't fall. All other earthly idols fall. None of them can live up to their expectations. Messiah Obama, bless him. There's no man on earth I wish more of God's blessings for than him. But he is going to fail in the people's eyes. He cannot deliver everything the people expect of him. All earthly messiahs fail. Even Alan Shearer, the messiah of Newcastle Football Club, lost 3-0 today. All earthly idols, all earthly rescuers will fail. But Isaiah says God doesn't fail. God doesn't fall. God doesn't topple over. You don't need to nail God in place because he's so weak. God does not fail. And then God is the destination at the end of your journey. Verses 8 to 14. We just put verse 14 up on the screen for the moment. God is a destination at the end of your journey. God says, I called you from the ends of the earth. I've chosen you and not rejected you, so don't fear. You are precious to me. You are important to me. God's called you. So be calm in the storm. From the ends of the earth. They were actually... Now here's a point. You see, the Jews were called from Iraq. Back to the modern headlines again. Abraham originally lived in Iraq. And God called Abraham out of Iraq, through to Syria, to the Lebanon, and down in to Judea, to Palestine. From there, of course, they went to Egypt. From there, back to Judah. From there, back to Iraq. And from Iraq, back to Palestine. And God says, I am with you through all this. I am with you. And he says, don't be afraid, O worm Jacob. That is a pretty good translation, apparently, of the original Hebrew. O you worm, cause his people a worm. I don't know how you feel about that, but a worm in a positive, affirmative, cuddly way. Our destiny doesn't depend on our strength. Our destiny does not depend on our strength or our numbers. Our destiny depends on our God, who is our Redeemer. And we don't. A worm, there's no one who has life less in control than a worm, really. I mean, they can be flooded out, they can be dug out, they can be picked up by birds. Worms have very little control over themselves, do they? And that's bad news for us, those of us who are control freaks, who like to think we're in control of everything. I just found this on a website. You know you're a control freak when you leave notes on things you donate to charity in case they don't know how to use them. You know you're a control freak when you switch the toilet paper at work to come out the front instead of the back of the roll. And finally, a light bulb joke for you. How many control freaks does it take to change a light bulb? Answer, only one, because nobody else knows how to do it properly. We are control freaks. But God says you're just a worm. You don't realize how weak and helpless you are. But don't be afraid, because you have a great God standing beside you. John Piper, in his sermon on this passage, talks about the five pillars of fearlessness. The five pillars of fearlessness. Firstly, I am with you. God is with me. Secondly, I am your God. God is my God. Thirdly, I will strengthen you. God will just give us strength. I will help you. And fifthly, I will uphold you with my righteous hand. The five pillars of fearlessness. God is with us, whatever the circumstances. And you'll be pleased to know I found a good quote from Charles Spurgeon on this point, on this sermon. I always try to read one of his sermons on it, because they're so inspiring, though they are so old. And he says this, these are the sweetest words in the Bible, he says. I will help thee. When God says, I will, there is nothing in it, brethren. The will of God started worlds into existence. The will of God made nature leap from chaos. The will of God sustains all worlds, bears the huge pillars up, and establishes creation. It is God's will. He lets the world live. The world lives on the will of God. And therefore, when God says, I will help you, he cannot fail. Take this fact then to your fear. The fact that God is with you, that God called you and will remain with you. You might feel at times like a worm. It's not a bad description. I have worm days. I have worm moments in my life, more often than I care to admit. But that's okay. It's okay to feel like that, as long as you put alongside it, God is with me. Please take that into your future. Please take that into your exams, students. Please take that into your dissertations, into your presentations. Please take that into your job interviews, your job searching, the anxiety of where to live, and that absolute horror of having to go back to live with your parents, perhaps. I know what it's like. I know what it feels like. God does too. But God's going to go with you. And we're going to get you back one day in Penrith, and you're going to stand up and tell us all that God has done in your life. So God bless you.